I was listening to this Split Zone Duo. It's this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about how, as a group, Michigan fans don't really have the same like ride or die fanaticism about Tom Brady as you see with like Peyton at Tennessee or even at Michigan with, you know, Denard Robinson. And it's not like Brady has been a particular stranger to Ann Arbor, right? He still shows up. But they don't, you don't see this, you don't see this clamor around his career. And the only, around his pro career anyway, and I mean, you know, the amount of Tennessee fans who followed Peyton to the Colts and then the Broncos can kind of be explained away because the Titans weren't there for a huge portion of folks growing up. But in wondering if it was explained by the, you know, solid, not spectacular performance of his college career, you know, he had Mike DeBoard as a lead weight around his ankles and the ankles of the future all-pro tackles on the line. I started to go back down the list and I was like, okay, how would I feel about this or that, about, you know, like this or that quarterback if they had then gone on to string together what amounts to two Hall of Fame careers back to back. And I imagined, I tried to put myself in a situation where I would have to feel this about like Rick Clawson. And then I started going down the Florida list for you two, and I was like, okay, what if Skylar Morningweg had gotten to the NFL?
Had just caught fire.
And I was trying to think of like where is the axis between like, okay, this is a really solid career, it's reasonable that he got drafted, and would just absolutely break my brain if he had gone on to light it up in the NFL. I was going down the Tennessee list and I was going down the Florida list, but you know where besides Michigan has had the biggest string of like fifth year quarterbacks, because we've talked about it before. Georgia. So
yeah.
And I'm going down this list and one of them immediately pops out. Can you imagine Joe Cox?
Just sure.
Like getting to the NFL, glazing over into one giant freckle and just setting the record books on fire. And that, now I kind of get it. Like I didn't really understand the Michigan's mindset on that before, but now I kind of get it.
Like, well, Brady's weird because there are so many guys that we can name off the top of our head who they ride harder for, like, mm-hmm. vocally.
Yeah.
Like Denard Robinson. Denard Robinson,
yes.
Right? You say Denard Robinson to a Michigan fan, and they're like, yeah, I took a bullet for him. You say Tom Brady.
Like, is Chad Henne on that list?
Chad Henne
won a playoff game, unlike some pro quarterbacks we're talking about.
Relatively, he's much higher.
Like, right, mm-hmm. Right.
They certainly think it's a lot funnier to tell you Chad Henne is theirs.
Yeah, but that just like psychologically, that's fascinating to me. I don't really have anywhere I'm going with this.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list of the top career passers, like Drew Brees. Yeah, Purdue fans ride for. And then there's a lot of small school guys. NC State fans, are they crazy about Phillip Rivers? I don't know. They're not about much.
I don't know.
They hasten to remind you that he went there.
Sure.
Because they don't have a lot else to point out.
Russell Wilson.
The Boston College is kind of the same way with Matt Ryan. Pitt fans go very hard for Dan Marino, even if they weren't alive at the time, because
they
love
Pitt,
all their NFL guys.
Hey, he's a Pitt guy. He's a Pitt guy.
Rodgers with Cal, I don't know if they formally acknowledge each other at this point at all.
No, because he made a huge deal for a long time about not acknowledging them.
Ole Miss with Eli, the two Mannings in the top 10 are kind of, I mean, they've been such stars their whole lives. I think they're the biggest aberrations in the top 10.
Stanford with Elway, not a ton, but like Stanford doesn't care about these things.
They don't
know
they have a football program.
Yeah,
so,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. And like the rest, Russell Wilson is obviously a complex one. Montana Notre Dame fans will remind you, at least older ones.
Mm.
Basically,
Elway went to Stanford.
Yeah,
yeah. John Elway is there for the play.
Yeah,
like John Elway went and like
and
clapped the trombone player on the back.
And this
that
is like,
that game
like
also kept John Elway from playing in a bowl game.
That's like half the reason Harbaugh was so connected to the Broncos.
Yeah.
This is my lack of West Coast brain.
Like if I take and introduce you at the stadium during a game, do you get the lukewarm round of applause? Right. Like if I take Geno Smith and I introduce him at a West Virginia game,
right?
I think they're going to be
they're gonna fall down screaming. Right. Yeah, it's going to be an Elvis moment.
Right. If I take Russell Wilson and I introduce him at a Wisconsin game,
okay.
I feel
but
like
we didn't
you're
know
get
now.
The,
okay, this is another that leads into another that's branch of another philosophical discussion, which is: would we have defended Tom O'Brien if we know Russell Wilson like we know Russell Wilson now?
Yes.
Would we have been
thing,
like this mean the, glass of milk has a point?
The unique factor with Wilson is he was one of the first stars of the pre-transfer era to have two alma maters, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I think they go harder because they went to claim him away from NC State, or at least they would have until the past year. And now they say he's more of an NC State guy.
Okay, so there's two others I can think of, roughly in the same time period. Troy Aikman at UCLA. Like, I don't feel like they're ever talking about that. And Jim Kelly at Miami, because it comes before all the fun Miami stuff. Like, he's not part of the Miami teams that they love.
No, they mentioned him in terms of, like, how crazy loaded the quarterback rooms were at the time. But, like, him as a solo guy, he kind of gets lost in the deluge of stars that follow.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't actually have anywhere I was going with that. I was just like, imagine Joe Cox having the career of Jalen Hurts. It's weird, right?
It's weird. It's profoundly weird.
Jalen Hurts having the career of Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I think the Eagles should just run QB sneak the entire game. Just come out, scrap the whole game.
Yeah.
We're running rugby scrum.
Yeah, they're really good at it. Like,
they're amazing.
They're incredible at it.
You're describing stretches of the game that's what they more or less do.
Yeah, that's fine. Just him and Sanders. Just run QB Sanders and push.
And they, like, mix it up with, like, one play fake where they throw it deep to A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
Where you're like, go, Burr! Where your MVP is Jason Kelce and his face is literally, like, black with bruises from running QB.
This
is the best fucking game of my life.
It's a great time.
55 rushing attempts, 7 passing. Dub. Fly the fucking flag, go Birds.
Kansas City is like, we only had 3 possessions. What the fuck?
three spectacular possessions.
Like,
incredible,
3 for 3.
Incredible plays up and
down
the field.
We scored touchdowns. We scored touchdowns and only held the ball for 6 minutes, but, like, shit.
Andy Reid's like, 24-21. What the fuck? They got the ball first. They got the ball last. Shit. Jalen Hurts' line is like 5 for 5 for 180 yards on the 5 play-action passes they pull off of QB sneak.
America's Secret Service Academy, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Hey, we are soldiers. The Shutdown Fullcast. You are listening to the internet's only college football podcast. This is a special episode today because it's a family business episode. I am joined by my uncle Jason Kirk Hall.
Hello.
Hi. Jason.
Hi.
Kirk, welcome.
Kirk Hall.
Glad you can make it into the office where you definitely belong and deserve to be. Joining this is my stepbrother-in-law, Ryan Nanny. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Look, I know what you're trying to do. I've been really good about not interrupting the intro for like a month because I know it's important to you to say everybody's name because we got on you about that.
Yeah.
But there's been something on my mind for like 2 days after talking about it with my wife, and I just need to bring it here.
My stepsister-in-law. Yes.
I think Dave Bautista would be an amazing Jean Valjean.
Oh, 100%.
Like...
As Ryan, did this get in your brain after somebody said Dave Bautista is basically, or it was Dylan, who basically said Dave Bautista is now just if Bob Hoskins vaped?
So that's part of it. It's part that, and it's part, due to the Grammys, we were doing our favorite game, which is, isn't it funny that Lin-Manuel Miranda doesn't have an EGOT and wants one really badly, as like other people keep, like Viola Davis has an EGOT now, and other people keep joining this list. That led to a winding road where it was like, oh, yeah. Les Mis was nominated as a film for, you know, all these acting performances, even though it was a bad film. And Caitlin was like, the thing that the movie gets, one of the things the movie gets wrong and that recent productions have got wrong is that Jean Valjean is supposed to be a big dude. Like, mm-hmm. like the book and the musical make like a big emphasis on like, this is like the biggest dude
Hoss.
French people have seen.
Yes.
And like,
that's why his name is John John.
Oh, right, neck. Right. Yeah. And I and thinking about it, and
like
thinking
the John
about
of Johns,
and thinking about like what Dave Bautista wants to do with his career, I'm like, wouldn't he like just fucking yoked Valjean? I think would be great, and I do think we keep Russell Crowe then.
He can't sing worse than Russell Crowe.
Is Russell Crowe the singing voice? Is that how we do it?
Because no, I think
I find that I performance think we keep, irreplaceable.
I think we keep Russell Crowe as Javert. I think Russell Crowe versus Batista is a really
okay.
Good
so then in the third screen. Remake, can yeah. we finally address why they're all getting Javert wrong?
Sure.
Thank you.
Who do you want to put in that role?
Somebody who can sing.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm against it.
I'm voting.
Y'all's problem is that you've never heard Stars sung the way it was supposed to be sung, and I'm sorry. I know exactly what I sound like, but I'm right.
You're right.
I like it the way it is.
How about kids. Can we do? Can we get Dave Bautista to an EGOT with what franchises?
Oh, I would
okay?
love that.
Because
oh,
sure. I'm going to go ahead. Yeah, I'm going to say, do we get him the Tony with a revival production
have
of Les Mis?
No, yes. We have. Okay, we get him the Grammy for he's gonna read Michelle Obama's ebook.
Okay, right.
Because that's a real easy, easy way
Dr. Jill
celebs.
Biden's. Dr. Jill Biden's.
Yes. A real easy way for celebs yep. to get the Grammy is to do an ebook.
Joe pulled me in closer yep. for a kiss. Yep. I've never experienced such love.
Yep.
You usually don't get to add such details to an audiobook, but if you got him, put him in.
Sure.
And then yes, I think revival of Les Mis, Tony for that, Emmy for doing a performance of that on the Tony Awards. That's the easiest way, the most mm-hmm. bullshit way to get yeah. an Emmy is to do a performance on another award show.
Let's those just are the EGOTs that should come with asterisks, like yeah. when the New York Times says you bought too much of your own book.
Right.
I think yeah. we'll just send him back to TV. He'll get the Emmy for WWE SmackDown.
That's fine. I'm good with that. And then Oscar for movie version of
Les Mis. We can get this done in 2 years, I think.
Mm.
The other thing that bothers me very briefly is I think it's bullshit when musical movies get nominated for best song by adding a song that they stick in the end credits. I don't care when other movies do that. Like all the James Bond movies always get nominated and often win because they have a credit song, and that's fine. They're not musicals. I think if you add a new song just to get nominated, it needs to be in your fucking musical. You made a movie that's all about singing. You don't get to get credit for like, oh, we stuck a new song on the credits. Can we have an award? That's bullshit.
I think that we should go back retroactively and award proper. Like, you should be able to give the best Oscar to the best song in a movie. Mm-hmm. Because when you go back and ask somebody, what's a song from a movie that really stands out to you? It's never a prestigious movie. It's always like if I were to ask my brother, who, of course, is the representative Oscar voter, my brother, right? The construction manager from Tennessee. If I were to ask him what song, he would be like, oh, Fight to Survive from Bloodsport. That totally deserves a retroactive Oscar. We need to go and do that.
The example I think you are... I'm going to find it here real quick. The example I think you are looking for is... I think it's the 1987 Academy Awards. I got to find it. Hold on. I'm getting there. Computer's being slow.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt.
Yeah.
While you're looking for that.
Yeah.
Lego has revealed their 6,000-piece Rivendell set.
Whoa.
That's we're about
gonna,
fucking time.
We're going to come back to that. Hang Best on. Original song.
I'm done for today. I'm going to look at this.
Yeah. Sorry, the set will release on March 8th and will cost $500. Fine.
It's about 59th
Academy Awards, 1987. Winner, Take My Breath Away from Top Gun. Also nominated.
There's like roof tile patterns and everything.
We'll Glory of Love from Karate Kid Part 2. Somewhere Out There from An American Tale.
I think the actual problem is we don't have songs that play over the credits that describe what you just saw in the movie anymore.
That's what true. I like. I want didactic, summary songs that play over, just in case I get through the movie and I was unclear on what happened. Like,
is that not what 3-6 Mafia won for?
They did, but it should be like every Fast and Furious movie should have a word for word, point for point, point plot summary at the end of the movie.
I
it
see.
Says like when they took that vault.
No, what you're actually describing is like what Will Smith used to do for his movies. This is Wild Wild West the song.
Correct. Why do you think they were wildly popular?
Why
didn't
you say
and successful?
Wild Wild West
like
the song
the movie
as though
Wild
Wild,
Wild
West,
West
was not a song.
The blockbuster smash that we still talk about, Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
Giant fucking spider in the
yeah.
Holly, it looks like this is the 7th biggest Lego set ever.
Where does it rank in terms of proximity to the Death Star set?
It looks like it's the third. It would be third biggest in the Star Wars universe. It's smaller than the biggest Falcon, smaller than the biggest Walker, but bigger than the Death Star.
Smaller than the biggest Falcon.
Also, it's bigger than Hogwarts, because should be.
Yep.
First
Don't
on the block.
Don't see any reason why not.
Also joining us, let's see, there is...
We're still in the intro. That's right, Big Dog. You got it.
We are.
We said we were doing White Stripes this time. Don't
yes.
fuck it up.
Yes, my, let's see, ex-wife and former drummer.
But also sister.
And sister, Holly Anderson, from Detroit. She only wears white and red. And on...
Go Huskers.
Yes, and on the ones and twos, as always, my brother, Michael... Server.
Oh, look at that, Ryan. You're like a third string distant brother. Server's also, the brother.
I don't have a problem with that. I want to be very clear.
Doesn't. Yeah, he's fine. He's fine with that.
But that means you're not Server's brother.
Oh, well.
Okay, all right. New resolution. One of the three of you is going to develop an iota of self-worth this year, and I don't care who.
We're going to do it.
Pick one.
Can it be Spencer? Let's make it be Spencer.
It'll be
a third of
each of us, like the
that's
triforce.
Gonna be that's
okay,
gonna be a problem.
Sure.
No, I'm too old. That's just putting bad coal on a good fire. You don't want that. The other way around. Yeah. I'm getting to the age where it's just not worth the investment. You know, for a number of things. You're like, do we get him a new car?
You're emotionally totaled as
it
a
is
person.
What it is.
Yeah.
Spencer picks up a toothbrush. He's like, oh, this will see me out.
Yeah. I saw a stand-up comedian say that was the Kirkland when you bought pants at Kirkland that's when you really know that you know you've achieved enlightenment or given up one of the two. You buy Kirkland brand pants, yeah. Getting to that stage. So yeah, let's get self.
All right, so it's not Spencer. Great.
No, it's not me. I'm gonna go ahead. You know what? Ryan. This is the year we give Ryan.
Oh, Jesus.
Self-worth.
Look at that.
Yeah, it's off to a great start. Listen.
I assume we're not picking Server because Server's doing fine.
Oh, no, he's
Server's
fine.
Doing great.
I'm the favorite son.
They
call me to complain about Spencer.
And it can't be me because I have too much self-worth.
All right, fine.
The idea of anyone calling anyone else to complain about me seems strange because I hear complaints. Like, no one has
Do
a problem
you?
Giving me them. Okay, how's this? I know the complaints get addressed to me.
Mm. Hold on, I want to see if I can do this with a straight face. Nobody would ever complain about you to somebody else.
But if they,
that
if,
wouldn't happen.
That just seems like far too much volume attached to me as a subject, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not going to be Spencer. You're right.
Yeah, it's not going to be me. Not gonna be
I'm not even worth having haters.
That's it. Why would I have so many better targets for haters? You know, Have you considered? Yeah, no, I can point.
Are
you
they on the show?
Yeah.
Are they in the room?
No, not in the room. No. Okay.
Betty.
She's right here.
Betty needs one hater.
She has one, dude. Oh,
they're from Ohio.
Yeah.
Fucking losers.
She's still alive, bitches. Isn't that right?
So to get into this, because of course nothing is happening in the sports world this week, so we're going to talk about Iowa football. But to get into this, I wanted to state it. Just everybody, if we could share our favorite fail son, our favorite nepotism case in college football, because this sport is rife with people whose primary asset on the resume is their last name and their ability to text dad and get a job, or their uncle or their grandfather, or call someone who was known by either of them to get a gig. And at times it can be merely uncomfortable, and at times it can be a debacle, completely unmooring your program, bringing down long successful regimes, and serving as an embarrassment to your team, program, and an aggravation for the fan base of the highest order. I have many good picks, but I'll let someone else pick first.
Am he not merciful?
I know. Because I have like 9.
Make somebody pick.
Not the one in the news. We're building up.
Not the one in the news, because I think that that's right now the most acute and spectacular, because we've managed to create a litmus test for degree of fail son that the institution gave us in this case. All right?
Right.
So, Jason, do you have
how many Bowdens are on your list?
All of them.
Okay. Good.
But not but in a particular order. In a particular order.
Right. I'm guessing 3?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there go all of mine.
who is your favorite Bowden fail son?
Well, as Holly said, Jeff, of course.
It's got to be Jeff.
It's got to be Jeff.
Are we hating specifically because he made hundreds of thousands of dollars over a period of years only playing Xbox with recruits? Absolutely, we are. We would love that job. Give it to us.
Dude.
I actually have a different one.
Mm.
I am still waiting for somebody at NBC to utter the words. And now, you know, at the start of a game, anthem's over, throwing from studio. Ah. And now we hand over to the best reporter available for the job, Jack Collinsworth. Just say it straight face. Just say it one time. Say it one time.
Jack Collinsworth, obviously the best candidate for the job. Period.
You both spell your names like idiots.
A job that nobody would want, clearly, right? Mm. And that nobody works
just,
really
just
hard
for. Just say
it
once. So one person on NBC, say it one time. And now we go to the best available reporter, Jack Collinsworth.
You know what I think the saddest part about that is? Is that not only is that like a shameful nepotism hire, and has been ever since he popped up doing the Kentucky Derby, etc. The worst part about it is this, that one of the reasons that they keep him, and this is bad for Jack too, is that he's cheap.
Uh-huh.
That's it. NBC
Why is he so cheap?
Because he's young.
Is there
fortunately there are no other young reporters on television.
Is that a reflection of the level of demand from other outlets? Is that what's going on there? Probably not.
The market makes no mistakes, Jason, is what I'm saying.
Well, evidently
this is the network
here.
Of CNBC, so I feel like they would know.
Yeah, Jack Collinsworth.
I will no longer see NBC if they keep him, that guy on the freaking sidelines.
Nailed it.
I'm trying to
absolutely
watch
nailed
my
it.
Darn Notre Dame games. I want to hear Drew Brees speaking, not Jack Collins. Oh. Is he still doing that shit?
Okay, maybe he was the best reporter available.
Yeah, I'm saying it was a grim selection there.
I just want to see. One day they're going
to
give
NBC
in.
Football. It could always be worse.
I can only think of one person I want on calling a Notre Dame game for commentary in the color section, and that is... Da-da-da-da-da. Golden Tate. That's it. Golden Tate.
What about Golic Jr.?
Yeah.
Golic Jr.?
Much
well, of course, he would do a good job. I think he deserves better than that.
Well, No. I think we're going for memes and comedy. Like, see if Golic Jr. can get the degree revoked.
Golic Jr., the only good son.
And whatever.
My choice is Randy Moss. Randy Moss on Notre
Dame.
He's back.
He's back, and you can't get rid of him. And you have so many complaints about West Virginia.
Okay, I got it.
The fighting Irish.
Golic Jr. and...
Fart in our ass.
Okay.
Gojo and Randy Moss, but the conceit is that Gojo is Randy Moss's son. And it is constantly referenced that he will never live up to his
name. Randy Moss and Mike Moss Jr.
Yeah. Michael Mike. Golic. He's going to hyphenate. Michael Golic Moss.
Son of Randy.
Son of two NFL greats.
They co-parented beautifully. I think he came out nice.
We're all very proud of him. All of us.
All very proud. I think my Jeff Bowden would have been my number one with a bullet.
Jeffy.
But Jeff. By the way, Jeff stepped down. Jeff didn't like wait to be. Jeff was the one who left.
Yes.
That's the way that story goes. Is he walked into his dad's office and was like, This is not sustainable. You get a little bit of credit. It took a long time, and it took a lot of bad football. What? I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, except then he's like, if stories about his brother's subsequent gigs were true,
yeah,
he was coordinating for Terry for ages because one of their parents made him take his brother along, like they're going to the pool.
Is the nepotism different when it's, hey, I have to, my dumbass brother, I have to give him something to do, versus this is my son and I love him and he's very important to me? I genuinely don't know, but it feels different.
I almost feel sorry for the ones in the brother situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's not like your son, you might be like, you know, okay, he's learning. You know when your assistant coaches are fucking up. Like, these guys are not stupid. They know when things are going wrong. This is not a problem that they have. And having to sit there and watch it go wrong and knowing that you're going to hear about it from your wife's sister, whom you love dearly, if... You know, knowing that Allison is going to be on the phone. I just picked an Allison. I'm sure they're all married to Allisons. It just seemed like a thing. I almost feel sorry for those dudes. Because it's not like they don't know that these guys are fucking up.
With your brother, though, I feel like there is a greater level of comfort to firing your brother. Because at one level or another, you know your brother's a dumbass.
And he knows you're a dumbass, too. He would do it to you.
Right. You grew up beating each other up, most likely. Yeah.
Right.
What's a little more?
So, really, yeah, the firing is an extension of that fight you had in the playroom when you were 14 and 12 and put a hole in the drywall. This is just another step in that, right? Yeah.
If anything, this is a much more financially prosperous step.
The latest theater of battle in that ongoing war.
This is. And there's a part that's probably 98% sad that you have to fire your brother. And there's probably 2% when you fire your brother that's like, gotcha, bitch.
I mean, the real mean brother thing to do would be to be a head coach somewhere and every year interview your brother for a coordinator spot and never hire him.
And be like, sorry, man.
Oh, man.
We went another way.
Yeah, Tommy Rees was just too impressive, so we got it. Sorry.
And somehow every year, like, I mean, you know, it was, hey, we got you the interview. That's good experience. Next year, we're going to actually meet.
Yep. And hey, remember, I took you out to lunch. That was fun. We had fun at TGI Fridays, didn't we?
Got to go to Quiznos. Yeah. There's like a father firing a son. That's like you're a failed parent, right?
Yeah.
To some extent. You feel like
one. Yes.
Yeah, that's on you.
But you feel like one. A brother firing a brother, it's not on you. That's mom and dad's fault.
Yeah,
this of course leads to the only iteration
squeezed
I can think
of. Squeezed your head too hard when you came out.
Of son firing father, Lane Kiffin firing Monty. Right. Like, I don't even know how to unpack that one.
You're the ultimate victor.
Is that Lane. Zeus defeating the Titans more or less?
It is. It is.
Yeah, it's kill your masters. There's a large amount of philosophy on which Lane Kiffin studies. Every day via Google image searches.
Throwing the emperor down the shaft of the Death Star.
Mm-hmm. Lane is the son who fights back when Cronus tries to eat him, right?
Like, yeah. Argh. Yeah. I'm going to kick you in the throat from inside, Daddy.
Lane has done two spectacular familial hirings and firings. Remember when Lane was at Tennessee and left to go to USC?
Nobody remembers that. That was real chill.
You're also forgetting a third.
I'm probably forgetting a third. Yeah. Okay. Oh, Chris.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So the one I'm talking about is that his brother-in-law, who was his QB coach, David Reeves, didn't know he was taking the job. And he didn't take him to USC.
That's right. That's right.
Please pin this. Please pin this. Which is... Oh, God, this is so great, because this does not even line up with the timeline of the divorce.
No. I was going to say, like, not his brother-in-law anymore, though, is he?
No. There are a few different transactions in the works.
No, but it doesn't line up with the divorce in such a way as to suggest that Layla was fine with this and also didn't tell her brother.
Right, right.
Which is very funny. As someone with a little brother, this is
I choose to believe that Layla was like, you told him, right? And he was like, Yeah.
Ed took out the trash, right?
I think Ed did.
Stop.
Ed told him. Ed got right on it.
I don't know what he said.
Yeah. And he also, I think, gently encouraged Chris Kiffin to leave.
There we go.
Yeah. His own brother.
Yeah.
And take the Cleveland Browns defensive line job after one season. Which, like,
isn't it so much meaner to tell your brother to go work for the Browns than to fire him?
Like, just pee in my shoes, buddy.
Great opportunity for you, Chris. I really,
really
I
saw this.
I think you would thrive.
And I thought of you.
I think you would thrive with the Browns. Yeah, Jesus. Fine, I'll go to med school already. God damn.
I just looked at the posting, and you were the first name that came to mind for me.
God damn, dude.
No more Thanksgiving.
Associate you with the Browns.
Yeah. So, I want to go back a little further because this goes back to a holy of holies in the coaching world and has one of the funniest endings to a nepotism saga I have ever heard in my life. Of all of the sons that Don Shula, the legendary coach of the Miami Dolphins, had, all right, no one rode the nepotism wagon harder or faster than Dartmouth College graduate Dave Shula. Dave Shula, after one season as a pro, where I'm sure it was, please put my 5'11 son at wide receiver. After one season as a pro, he only worked for the Dolphins. He went and he was the offensive coordinator and QB coach at the Cowboys for a year where all of the players absolutely despised him, gave him no credit, and he was demoted from that position. After being demoted, by the way, he was hired by the Bengals, and after one season, as a wide receivers coach for a not particularly great offense, he was hired as an NFL head coach. As an NFL head coach at the age of 32. He was hired at the age of 32.
By, and this is important, by which storied franchise?
By the Bengals.
By the team that knew better, having seen his the lackluster offense he'd been a part of.
That's not the important thing, because the owner of the Bengals, Mike Brown, knew that this was the cheapest way to get a head coach. This was 100% the will you do this for $113,000 a year.
Yes, and did it knowing full well how bad it was. And yet, happened at the age of 32 to hire Dave Shula. Dave Shula was a miserable failure as a head coach. Just absolutely deplorable. Somehow won 5 games in a season once, and then won seven, and then got fired after going 1-6 with a winning record, with a total win-loss winning percentage of .268.
Ryan, to your point, this that winning percentage was good enough for 4.5 years. That wouldn't be the case these days, but the Bengals have been thrifty for a time.
Yeah.
After just one season with Dave Shula, Boomer Esiason decided to go to the New York Jets.
Damning.
That's not. But we're not at the funny part of the story.
There's something like aggressively non-threatening about having him be named Dave too. It's like he hired his golden retriever.
By the way, if I could give you,
he's a very good boy.
If I his name is David Donald. Never heard of
David
that.
What? Donald Shula. Yeah.
Do you know who? Well, do you know who Dave Shula? Do you know who Dave Shula got the job over?
No.
Bill Cowher. Bill Cowher was the other candidate.
Oh, come on.
The Kansas City Chiefs defensive coordinator at the time. Fortunately, that didn't go on to. Obviously, you know, the Bengals missed out on a Super Bowl coach, but unfortunately, it didn't directly affect them.
This is a great line. I have to emphasize, this is from Dave Shula's Wikipedia page. Cowher took the head coaching position with the rival Pittsburgh Steelers that same offseason and went on to have a 22-9 career record against the Bengals, the most wins he had against any team as a head coach. This included an 8-1 record against Shula.
Shula lost 50 games faster than any NFL coach in history. This is a good wiki.
Yeah, this is solid as hell. By the way, I'm going to give you a headline that I don't want to embellish on. Leonard Shapiro, October 27, 1992, in the Washington Post. For David Shula, comma, a legacy of victory.
Listen, you have to admit that in every game Dave Shula coached, a team won.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
He was part of many wins.
We're not even to the best part.
Okay.
After he's fired at Cincinnati, where does Dave Shula end up? Dave Shula naturally goes back into coaching, takes a position as an assistant, becomes a coordinator, works his way up, and eventually enjoys success over a 22-year NFL career. That's not what happened. All right. That's not what happened. What actually happened was Dave Shula went to work for Shula's Steakhouse.
Yeah,
is what
baby.
He did. He is the only man to ever eject from an NFL head coaching job and go into cooked beef.
And still,
Tori Levine went into chicken.
Yeah.
With much happiness.
Still had to be a Nepo baby, even in that career. Couldn't go work for another steak chain. Had to work for Dad's.
The restaurant industry is the one place where you can literally walk in the door bleeding with no connections. They'll be like, go wash dishes.
Where else am I going to get a job at a steakhouse in America?
Yeah, no. Anyone can walk in. You can walk in with a handgun strapped to your face. They would be like, so can you work the grill?
Hey, all right, face. So you're back of house is what I'm seeing.
Hey, back of house.
Can you work Friday nights?
I don't think you're a hostess, but how do you feel about working brunch this Sunday?
Blam, blam. That's how he says yes.
Are you willing to work in our Ocala location?
Clearly yes.
Shout out to our Twitter friend, One Lung Dave.
Yeah.
At this time. Hey, why are you called One Lung Dave? Oh, very interesting.
All right, so why are we talking about Dave Shula again? I got lost.
Oh, we're talking about Dave Shula because I think he's my favorite nepotism case. Okay.
Until this week.
It's summer. Major League Baseball's in full swing, and there's one app for you if you want last-minute deals on Major League Baseball games, and that's GameTime.co. That's right, GameTime.co. I'm looking at the app right now, and I'm picking out America's team, really, the Kansas City Royals. And at Kauffman Stadium, just in a couple days, there's tickets available for $16. And then, well, I don't want to up the stakes too much here, but let's go to next week. It looks like they're playing the Chicago White Sox. There are tickets available right now for $3. You could see a Major League Baseball game in Chicago for $3. What stadium, you ask? Not important. It's in Chicago. But GameTime.co is not just for Major League Baseball games, even though you can get great deals for that. You can also get great deals for concerts, football games. Those are going to be coming up pretty soon. You can find them on GameTime.co. I use GameTime.co to purchase last-minute tickets for an Olivia Rodrigo concert. Tyler Childers did not show up at mine. That would have been awesome, but it was awesome nonetheless. And GameTime.co made it super easy. I got my parking through GameTime.co, and I got great tickets for my wife and I. GameTime.co made all of that so easy, and one of the greatest concert experiences I've ever had in my entire life. And I'll be using them again. In fact, I'm seeing a little band called The Beaches in late September. And where did I get my ticket? That's right. Even ahead of time. I didn't wait till the last minute because GameTimes.co has you covered then as well. That's what I love about it. Whenever I want to get a ticket for an event, whether I heard about it months before and procrastinated to no end and have left myself in a lurch, you can save up to 60% off buying last minute for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, anything else. So take the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets with GameTime. You can download the GameTime app, create an account, and use code FULLCAST for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code FULLCAST for $20 off. Download GameTime today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Ryan, how good does it feel to dust off those legal muscles and dive into the...
I wish y'all could see Ryan just like calmly flexing and beaming beatifically right now.
Growing size.
It's so... All right. So here's the part where if you haven't been paying attention, a thing happened in the last, 24 hours as of when we're recording this. Brian Ferentz, the offensive coordinator of your Iowa Hawkeyes, and they are yours, and you bear responsibility
trouble,
for them.
Trouble, they're my Iowa Hawkeyes.
Had his contract amended in a few ways. It has been basically set up so that he's going to be the offensive coordinator through June 30th, 2024. And if he meets following two very simple, not very complicated performance objectives, he will go back on a two-year rolling agreement where basically every year they keep adding a year so that you can coach at Iowa until you die, and maybe longer, frankly. And if he doesn't meet these, his contract will terminate. Now, I should say, lots of Iowa Twitter has already pointed out, like, well, that doesn't mean Kirk just can't re-sign him. So this doesn't necessarily mean this will be the end of Brian Ferentz at Iowa. But
didn't they also dock his pay like $50,000?
They did, but they had also raised it not that long ago. So yeah. Yes, he was getting paid $900,000 a year. And
they decided to give him more, which is a searing indictment.
And now he's down to $850,000. But if he meets these requirements, which we still haven't gotten to yet, but we will, he'll go up to $925,000 a year. Here's what Iowa is asking of Brian Ferentz for the 2023-24 football season. Number one, the team must average at least 25 points per game. And number two, the team must win at least 7 games, including a possible bowl game.
This is about a personal essay.
Now,
so
25
your analysis.
Points.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jason.
Does that include points scored by not the offense? Because I only ask. I wouldn't ask this for most teams, but Iowa in particular, their meager scoring output this past season was boosted by I'm gonna guess the country's most prolific scoring defense, which was none of Brian Ferentz's coaching acumen coming into play.
I don't think that's fair. I think they practice against his offense. That probably boosts their confidence and teaches them a lot.
Iron sharpens iron. Yeah,
that's right. Mm-hmm. At best, this agreement is unclear, and I think the fairest reading is just that the team must do it. The word team is not defined. There is nowhere that says the team means the
There's
offense.
There's no Brian team.
Correct.
Right. Ferentz's team.
So yes, it is entirely conceivable that through a combination of punt returns and safeties and pick sixes, Iowa could reach this measure and theoretically never score an offensive touchdown. Sure.
Yes.
On the board here.
That's what we want.
Love it.
Other things that are on the board here, just the specter of Iowa running up the score late in games that they've already got in hand because they have to. Because they know they can't get to the Nebraska game averaging 23.8 points a game. Because that's exactly when they will fuck this up and not get there.
What, absolutely right.
What makes you think they could do it?
I'm not saying they can. I'm not saying they can. But I am saying they'll try. And listen, running up the score for Iowa may mean things like other team is kneeling and defense is trying to rip the ball out.
Mm. Hey, what's Iowa's schedule during this time?
That's a great question. Let's go ahead and pull that up. Iowa 2023 football schedule.
While we're doing that, I also want to propose that it is in when we use the word they, I think there are two people here who are going to be very invested in making sure that this team scores 300 points in the regular season. But the players themselves have every incentive to, hey, we're up by three. That's plenty. We're parking the bus.
Yep. To before we get to the schedule, very briefly, to set the context ever so slightly, the Iowa Hawkeyes in 2022 averaged as a team. Spencer, would you like to hazard a guess?
As a team, I would say they averaged 18 points a game.
Yeah, 17.7.
Okay.
Like rounding up, that counts. So we are talking about a fairly significant, like a touchdown a game is not nothing. On the other hand, this would bring them to, let's go ahead and pull this number up. 1 second. So if they get to 25 points a game, that would have put them tied with Arkansas State, above Central Michigan and Mizzou, and Auburn did not score 25 points a game, and just below Rice, Southern Miss, New Mexico State, and Troy. They would be squarely in the 80s in college football. This is not get us a average. They're asking Brian Ferentz to build them a below average football team. And that's within FBS. To say nothing of like the Power Five, the Big Ten. They're just saying give us a below average offense, but not this below average. You went way too far.
In writing.
Yes.
In writing. They have quantified just how shitty you are by establishing your excellent gold standard at worse than mid.
So here's the biggest problem, and then I'll get to Holly. We'll do the schedule because I want to talk about last year's schedule first. If you did this for last year's Iowa team, they win 11 games. The defense is good enough, and holds enough teams. They only got outscored. They only had an opponent score more than 25 against them. Two times. Michigan did it and Iowa State did it. Every other game on the schedule, they'll win. It means you beat Nebraska 25-24. You beat Northwestern 25-13. And you beat them 33-13, so I guess Northwestern's going to help you in this regard. But yeah, this in a weird way, this would work. Anyway,
this brings you up to the once every 5 years, like, oh, correct. No, Iowa's 8-0 situation.
Correct. Holly, here we go. Iowa starts the year with Utah State at home.
Okay.
Then they've got Iowa State in Ames. Then they've got Western Michigan at home. Now we get to the Big Ten part of the schedule. First of all, let's stop there. Utah State, Iowa State, Western Michigan. How do you all feel about their chances to get to 25 points on average across that stretch?
It's a lot of things are possible.
I think they make it once.
You think they only score 25 points once in that stretch?
Yeah.
I'll go twice in there. Okay. You have Utah State and WNU are for two straight years highly depleted. Iowa State was excellent on defense last year, partly because they got to play Iowa, but
also Kings of like the one score game, right?
And so also, you know, that game is just guaranteed to be either 9-2 or 500-300. So, I'll go just two out of that three there.
Okay. All right. Then we've got the following. Let's do them three at a time. Penn State.
Oh no.
Michigan State. Purdue. Are we getting to 25 in any of these games?
Michigan State.
Okay.
They're bad.
Yeah, they're not good. they're really not good. But that means so little here.
It's true.
It means so little, even though they beat the shit out of them last year. You know what? All right. So they'll get to 25 against Michigan State. I feel good about that. I think they'll get to 25 against Purdue as well. So 2 out of 3 there?
Okay. This year they beat Purdue 24-3. So...
So close. Agonizing.
Possible. Possible. Certainly not greatly hurting the effort. Last year, they lost to Purdue 7-24. So. Okay. Next three. Wisconsin.
Mm.
Road game. That one. Home against Minnesota. And I don't know if this matters. I'll let you decide. At Northwestern, but at Wrigley Field.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. That's, you know what?
That's a wrinkle.
Shorter, okay. Shorter field with the weird end zones. Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to make him play on a 60-yard field. Is there a closet?
Everybody's using the same end zone. Somebody gets confused. Yeah. I'll take it.
Okay.
I like your idea that there's a 7-point swing based off somebody getting confused by the wind in the end zones. Right?
Yes. An additional factor there is... you know, regardless of how good Northwestern is, they're never good. Still, their entire thing is about limiting the game to like 6 plays.
Yep.
Mm.
And now they're in a baseball stadium. Mm-hmm. That's an under.
Okay.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it for us.
I'm going to, and by the way, the trend, the Minnesota Iowa game this year was 13-10 Hawkeyes. So, and they really don't cruise real fast against this Minnesota team that plays at a pretty deliberate pace. I'm going to go ahead and say that this is our first stretch where I'm going 0-3.
Okay.
They're not hitting 25 in any of these.
Last three games. Two home games ending with a road game. Rutgers, Illinois, yes. Nebraska.
Bad all around.
Mm-hmm.
Rutgers, I feel like, has been very generous against, like, Rutgers is the game where it's like, this is one where at halftime it'll be like 10-3, and then Rutgers will be like, here are 2 pick sixes.
Sure.
They'll help you get there. Illinois.
I think Rutgers, you're you know, in a generic year, you're circling that as like, that's the game we make up ground.
Yeah.
But no, Rutgers is kind of what Northwestern wants to be, a shitty team that makes you shitty.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
and it reminds you of...
They return, you know, most of their non-bad players.
Illinois won this year's matchup 9-6. 9-6, which, while leaving Kirk Ferentz fully erect for the entirety of the game, was still a loss.
Upsetting.
Very far from 25 points.
Upsetting.
It's not just that it was 9-6. It's that, so, this is a game in which every score was a field goal, and every field goal was under 40 yards. 27, 32, 37,
yes, 27,
36. So many useless yards.
Hey, where do you find more useless yards than in Chicago?
Wow. That's a good point.
Leading to the finale.
Leading to Nebraska.
I really think could be the determining. Like, it feels like...
God, I hope this hangs in it. I hope this hangs in the balance. I hope this is it. I hope this is the answer.
Hey, guys, we got to score 25 for Brian. Who's we?
Who's Brian?
How
do you know, how good do you think this is for staff morale? Like, is Brian just an all-time great hang?
What's gonna be fun is like every time they score, I don't know, 26 points a game, even if they lose, they're gonna dump Gatorade on Brian's head. They're like, yeah, we did it! Yeah!
But it's going to be like Bronx cheery, like when
he
took the training wheels off.
Yes, it's going to be very unclear.
We didn't eat the bed all week, so you get to go to Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, it's at some point the line is going to become very blurry as to whether we are happy for or laughing at.
I just want to each week to go big picture here. I think I'm going to make a spreadsheet or something. We need a little thermometer that fills up, because like it doesn't matter when the points are scored. We
Correct.
Need 300 points.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It could be zero all year and then 300 on Nebraska, and he's good. if they somehow win seven games.
Are we going to do the prices? Are we going to do the Prices Right Mountain Climber, but for Brian Ferentz's point total?
100% yes.
Yeah.
Yodelay-ho,
yeah.
Doesn't it go down? Aren't there things that make it go down?
I think that's Plinko.
Yeah, that's Plinko.
Well, Plinko's nothing but down.
No, but the mountain. Yeah, the mountain climber just goes up, 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 and then if you go over, he goes.
And that's in this case, that's an extension.
That's Brian taking, football program. That's, yes. Brian taking the head coaching job. Yeah.
Yeah. So it should be noted that the two names you didn't hear on that schedule are Ohio State and Michigan. Mm. So it is fair to say that if there is a year where Iowa can set this incredibly low standard, incredibly low, and hit it, like, they have lined it up as best they can with the schedule that they have.
Yeah, the non-con is as good as it can be, considering you have to play Iowa State.
Yep.
Playing Penn State sucks, but you're avoiding probably an even better team, and you're avoiding Ohio State altogether.
I guess my thing is, like, I think it's entirely possible this happens, because I think this year was just, like, so statistically difficult to do. You look at these games and it's like, how did you lose multiple games where you held opponents below 11 points? That's a thing that happened.
I cast Muschamp.
It is very Muschampy. You're right.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if they get to the end of the year and they're like, yes, we scored 25.3 points per game, and because we're Iowa, with that level of output, we won 10 games and made it to the Big Ten Championship.
In which we were shut out, so we're now under 25.
At that point, I don't think we've really stopped to appreciate that. At that point, Kirk will be like, well, I listened to the critics. We made the changes we need to make, and now we're good. And now you can never question my sweet, beautiful Brian ever again.
So now there has to be like 3 bad years until we try this shit again.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
we have to bring the offense up to 2021 Iowa standards.
It's I think the worst outcome for Iowa is if they do this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it would be in the interest of players, particularly underclassmen, to like just don't tank. But if you're up,
yeah,
you're stop.
So
business decision.
I have a theory.
Okay.
Why 25 points? That's a very.
Are you about to numerology this shit?
Because of all those games they won by 24 last year. Or they got 24 last year.
I think it is because 2021 they scored.
Wait.
2021, they scored 23.4. So 31.8 the year before that. So it's basically 25.8 in 2019. So, like, in the Iowa brain trust's mind, mid-20s at 24.9 in 2016. Like, in their mind, that's the good number. 25 to 30 is the sweet spot.
So my question would be, if they had hit that number last year, where would that have put them in the league?
They would have gone to the Big Ten Championship. No question. Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in terms of whether we're asking a lot.
I think the thing to adjust there, well, I guess it doesn't matter if we're just saying change number, but like more touchdowns mean fewer tremendous punts, which means fewer safeties. So points are also coming off the board. And fewer like short possessions to set up great punts to score more safety. So I think for each touchdown, you're losing 4 points worth of safety.
Is Gary Barta trying to tank Iowa's Ray Guy legacy?
Wow.
My theory.
What a hater.
Is that in his head, Kirk Ferentz is like, what's an unattainable number?
I want rid of my son, giving him.
And you think he picked 25?
You don't think he's gone if Kirk wants him gone? Bullshit.
In his
well,
mind.
He reports to Gary Barta technically. So Kirk yeah, sorry, I can't do anything.
No, I can't do it. This is all Gary Barta. Kirk's principled.
I want to
walled himself.
Pause for a second.
50 points, but
you think Kirk picked 25 because that's the one that gets this done?
Can't get there.
Oh my god.
It's the biggest number Kirk Ferentz can imagine. Like imagine him thinking about imagine him like anticipating a football game having 35 points.
Yeah.
What? No, that shouldn't happen. Oh gosh, something went wrong there.
Maybe split between both teams.
He's pulling a Rumpelstiltskin.
This is when you have an 8-year old and they're like, you have all the money in the world, right? Like $500? And you're like, yes.
There's a much sadder way to arrive at this number, and that is that like all contracts, this was negotiated. Which means that at some point the representative for Brian Ferentz, I don't know who it is, it might be Brian himself, sat down and said, if it's 29, we walk. If it's 29, that's unreasonable, and we walk.
You can kiss my ass.
Scoring 4 touchdowns and then some a game? Fuck you, buddy.
I'll take one of the many jobs being offered to me if you dare me to score 26 points per game.
Shula Steakhouse is hiring for a manager right now, and I will be out of here in 5 minutes unless you bring this down. I want it at 19.
Ferentz Farms is calling.
That's right.
That's the other thing. At one point, they had to go to the other end of the spectrum, and they had to be like, 20.
Yes.
20,
yes.
Dog.
Yes.
Yeah. That's an improvement by almost a whole safety per game.
Right.
At one point, he had to be like, listen, time of possession is an important stat. I know some people poo-poo it.
We're making a quarterback change. You know how difficult those are?
Yeah.
We're losing a lot of defenders. We are not going to score as many points on defense.
So because I'm a bad person and because I like to torture Adam Kramer on Twitter, I looked up what the New York Jets would have done in 2022 if they averaged 25 points a game.
I have a certain meanness of spirit that I really like.
And I don't know what's wrong with me sometimes, but I'm also not going to change. Thank you. If the New York Jets, who this year went 7-10, if they had scored 25 points a game, they would have gone 14-3.
See? They would have gone aiming for excellence.
Not only would they have gone 14-3, they would have gone undefeated in division play and won the AFC East walking away. No questions asked. EC championship. What I'm saying is, if this works out, Brian Ferentz needs to go coordinate that offense and really bring it all together.
Hey,
Brian Ferentz, Aaron Rodgers,
a game.
Succeeding together for the city of New York like never before.
I mean, did Rodgers score 25 a game this year?
That's a good point.
I don't know. Instead, they had Zach Wilson throw the ball to the guy in the third row. Every other down.
Hey, he's far away. It's hard to do.
Hey, you know what? 3 things can happen when you throw the ball, and one of them is the guy in the third row, and that's not a turnover. So that's good.
To answer your question, the Packers only scored 25 points 7 times.
I wonder if that is it. Yeah, looking at it now, Iowa at scoring 25 points a game in the NFL would have been behind only the Chiefs, Bills, Eagles, Cowboys, Lions, Niners, and Bengals. Like, that is a playoff-grade offense if the Ferentzes can get Iowa to 25.
Do you remember, like, we should stop, listener, and remind you that there was a time where whenever the NFL coaching carousel got wound up, in the same way that Jim Harbaugh is floated this way now, Kirk Ferentz would randomly get
for the Chiefs job. It was specifically the Chiefs job.
That's right.
Repeatedly.
That's right.
And then they hired, like, you know, then they brought in the most college brain pro coach who's like, who's just an absolute perfect fit for the most space age offense in all of football. And like, my God, can you imagine the alternate reality where instead of Andy Reid, you hired Kirk Ferentz?
Hello, Patrick Mahomes. I'm Kirk Ferentz, and I'd like to introduce you to your fullback. You're going to be handing the ball to him a lot.
You're going to be spending a lot of time together.
You know, a good way to keep you upright and protect you, son? Hand off to the fullback. That's right. The Chiefs
just makes me
so sad.
The Chiefs for a while were on some serious like fuck point shit. They hired Herm Edwards.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every NFL team's had a stint or two like that. I think they don't usually last for decades like Iowa's going with.
But to be fair, the Chiefs did for a long time. So
over various regimes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I guess when there are valid Ferentz rumors mixed in, then I think we know what the ideology was.
I think the Chiefs, like many other franchises, just recognized that they needed a long deload period before they scored 40 points a game. Mm-hmm. They knew. They felt it in the air. They were like, I feel points coming on. We need several years of warming up for this so we don't
points is like going to a Brazilian steakhouse where you're like, I'm not eating breakfast.
No.
The best offenses, including the Chiefs, Bills, and Lions, is like, and Bengals, is like, yeah. This is,
Yeah.
These were deserved points.
Yeah.
And then Andy Reid got there and flipped the button to green. And they just kept bringing it, buddy. When I'm full, I'll let you know and turn this thing over to the red setting.
That means Brian Ferentz 100% would have been an NFL offensive coordinator, too.
Yeah.
See, there, he might have thrived.
He might have.
25 a game. How many more do you need than that?
Yeah, it's true.
It's a game of field position.
We trust our defense. I'm sorry you don't.
My position is sitting up in this booth and being paid $850,000.
My position is over the field.
Yes. I'm sorry your relationship with your defense is fractured. Mine is strong.
I hope somebody in the Iowa press conference is like, hey, why are you up in the booth? Well, it's so I can see the whole field. Yeah, why? Why?
No,
are you suggesting that seeing the whole field will improve?
Yeah.
Things.
I'm looking through previous Iowa seasons, and the business model has worked in the past.
Yes.
1985, just to pick a random year, pretty much. Points for... Oh, no, wait. I was looking at the wrong numbers, looking at the defense. I take it back. Excuse me. They went 10-2 this year, and I was looking at the 15.6, and I was like, see? No, that's what they allowed.
Yeah.
But this actually doesn't work.
There are most... I would say most, at this point, college football programs have... had periods like they're a pendulum where like they have periods where it's a lot of offense, maybe not as much defense, and they have periods where they lean on the defense a lot. Iowa really has not had any stretch of meaningful modern time where it's like, oh yeah, like Iowa's really just gunning it on offense and defense, whatever.
Like scrolling back, if it gets much over 30 points per game,
like
that's an aberration.
Yeah.
I just scrolled past an 11.4.
To create more of an aesthetic picture, even when Iowa has a fun and gun looking quarterback, what were they scoring under Stansy?
Oh wow!
Like even when they have the vibes for it, the physical vibes for it.
Yeah, it's 25-30.
What were those numbers like?
This is what, like 2009, 2010, Iowa.
You have a quarterback with a headband, and this is what you're doing.
Right.
Let me hit you with 1972, in which they finished 123rd in scoring with 9.9.
2009 Iowa finished 11-2, finished 7th in the final AP poll, beat Georgia Tech in the Orange Bowl, 23.2 points per game.
Here we go. I found a top 10 Iowa scoring season. 1968. They went 5-5.
All right.
They went 5-5. See?
I understand their aversion to the practice now.
It is irrefutable at this point.
Just one touchdown a quarter. That's
A top five season. Holy shit. 26 points a game in 1960, 8-1. 26. That's all we need.
I think the best way to explain this, Iowa's career passing touchdown leader is Chuck Long, who played from 1981 to 1985. And threw 70 touchdowns.
1950s Iowa was a fucking monster. This is a top 10 offense four years in a row.
Did he get five seasons for those 70 touchdowns? Or?
Let's see. They're spread out over four, but it's four meaningful ones, yeah. Wow. Ended with a 26-touchdown season in 1985.
That's when we play everyone's favorite game, Texas Tech quarterback in one season or Iowa football entire team one season.
And this is maybe like the peak dream of what Iowa could be. The 1985 Iowa Hawkeyes went 10-2, scored 36.7 points per game. That was second in the nation and held opponents to 15.6.
Let me give you the
Lost the Rose Bowl to UCLA.
1937, Iowa, 117th in scoring with 4.5. The average game was 15-4.
That's so stupid.
You hit 17 points. They're like,
oh my God. 1931, last in the country with 0.9 points per game. This is it. Yes. The perfect Iowa football season.
Which year is this?
The 1931. They scored against non-major George Washington, and that's it.
That's pretty good. Coach Burton Ingwersen.
Yeah. All these coaches were auto-generated back then.
Yeah.
That's when is that when your coaching philosophy doesn't even get to like step three? What do? We play hard. We play real hard.
Also, that guy had been around a long time. He knew better. He knew better than to try.
Never score.
Man, they got fucking trashed. Absolutely trashed. Naturally, the closest loss was a 7-0 loss to Nebraska. Iowa and Nebraska have always been this way together.
Dancing like this for a long time.
Always been this way together.
Going to get together and play real football.
Real sticky football.
Oh, here it is. 1900. Iowa led the nation in scoring.
Also,
38.9.
Holly, you know who drafted Ricky Stanzi, right?
Chiefs?
The Kansas City Chiefs. That's correct.
Yeah.
Was there just a stretch there where they were just getting the most yay-hoo-ass white boy possible?
They
drafted Brody Croyle, too.
They drafted Tyler Bray. That's why I guess.
They drafted Aaron Murray. They did draft a lot of, like... Hey, for a while, the draft profile of Chiefs quarterback was former boyfriend of your sister that everyone hated. Like, that's what they were looking for.
Man, if that ain't Aaron Murray.
If that ain't Tyler Bray.
Families love Tyler Bray. Aunties love Tyler Bray.
Not the responsible ones.
I think aunties themselves like dating Tyler Bray. No one wants their sister dating Tyler Bray.
I would also like to congratulate Iowa on a week where we should be talking about the fact that Alabama has hired two coordinators. And Spencer, who are those two coordinators?
Two coordinators, Tommy Rees, coming over from Notre Dame to be the new offensive coordinator. And embrace tradition.
Former Tennessee head coach.
Former Tennessee.
It's technically true. For a month in April or something.
Dude, I'm so glad you mentioned this because I get to go back to my favorite underplayed storyline in recent college football management history, which is Pension Quest.
All right, Kevin Steele is the other answer.
Kevin Steele.
I say all this to say, on a week when we should be like, holy shit, Tommy Rees and Kevin Steele have been handed the keys by Nick Saban. Instead, we get to talk about Brian fucking Ferentz having to score
it could
eight
be worse.
Field
we could
goals
be talking
a game.
About Tom Brady.
That's true.
I like that. Yeah, Brian Ferentz is probably the guy we talked about most this football season. And here we are again.
Can't get enough.
Heck, we're talking about him right
now. We're talking about him right now, brother.
commercial must be working.
Seriously, honest, exactly. If a month ago we had set out and ranked the funniest defensive coordinators Nick Saban could possibly hire, Kevin Steele would have been on our list, and we would have been joking.
Yeah.
We would have been completely joking. It happened.
I mean, it's also
he does love us.
Spencer, who turned down this job to go to the NFL and go to the Saints instead?
Another guy on our list.
Turned down's a real interesting way to phrase it.
Okay, all right. That's fair. That's fair.
Was not offered. Sense.
Okay. I think it's funnier if we say he turned it down.
How about this? Couldn't come to terms.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I think he just walked in, got distracted, started fighting with his own reflection in the window.
Shadow!
Threat!
Pounce!
I cast pounce.
I'll choke you one of these days, you fucking shadow!
hurt my hands again.
There's got to be a trachea in there somewhere.
Plate glass window. Apply directly to the forehead.
Todd Grantham, Saints defensive coordinator. The NFL continues to just be the greatest league in the world.
We love it. We love it.
Yep. But no, we're talking about Brian Ferentz.
The middle of the field's open.
Yeah.
Kevin Steele. For any newcomers to college football, this was one of the worst head coaches in Baylor history, which is saying a lot. That was a long time ago. Now, that's only part of the resume. The resume includes giving up 70 points in a bowl game.
To whom?
That would be the West Virginia Clemson game.
Yeah, coached by Dana. Dana put 70 on him, brother.
Gino put 70. That's true.
Okay, yeah, attribute of the Seattle Seahawks or whoever his new team is. Yeah, and then since then it just bounced around, sort of like a ambulance chaser seeking out like scandal plagued regimes that he can attempt to emerge atop. Briefly, including a successful bid as Tennessee interim, by which I mean he gained the interim tag, was also the interim at Auburn the year before that.
Yeah.
And now is he the man in line for the throne at Alabama?
That's not even the thing we remember him for the most, is it, kids?
That is not even the thing we remember him for most. I remember
by which I mean dads.
When he was an assistant at Nebraska. And
this is in Sports Illustrated. You can look it up.
Yeah.
This is not apocryphal.
No. Riley Washington.
This was in a magazine.
Riley Washington was charged with an attempted second-degree murder and use of a weapon to commit a felony in a shooting when Washington pulled his gun and fired, allegedly saying, "Your life is gone," when he did this.
It's a really stupid thing. That's a stupid phrase.
It sounds like a poorly translated Hong Kong action phrase. Yeah.
That's exactly
movie,
what
right?
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Your life is gone. Mistranslation.
Yeah.
Make your make
American
your
port of a Japanese video game.
Yeah. Death has arrived. Yeah.
No, that's pretty sick.
It is pretty sick. He handed that. Yeah,
put that
guy,
on the shirt.
Yeah. The guy did not die. When Steele found out about it from Washington, Washington still had the gun involved in it. Steele said, and this is how you know he is an OG college football coach. He said, "Yeah, you better give that gun to me for safekeeping." And they put it in the safe in the Nebraska football
office. Whose office?
Tom Osborne.
Yep.
Well, is that safekeeping?
That's true. Coach. Yeah, we'll hold
it. Put it in the governor's
safe.
He'll do great at Alabama. Usually they have GAs to do this, but, you know.
Yeah.
I love this resume. Tennessee, New Mexico State, Oklahoma State, Tennessee, Nebraska, Carolina Panthers, and then all college from then on out. Like 1,800 different college
That's
jobs.
Just so many different allergies.
The Panthers are with the Panthers.
The Panthers are kind of low-key like what head coaches are to the Chargers, assistants are to the Panthers. You can find most assistant coaches who are like, "Yeah, I did 6 months with the Panthers."
Yeah, we probably did that at some point.
Me and the wife were going through a rough patch, so I just crashed with the Panthers for a little bit.
Yeah, this is the guy that Kevin Green attacked on the sideline at Carolina at one point. Mm-hmm. He is a guy who I believe he has been vegetarian for over 20 years on a dare. Somebody dared him to go vegetarian for a week, and he liked it so much that he kept going.
Was it Nick Saban?
I hope so.
Okay, that's not as funny as doing it on a dare the entire time.
Yeah.
It was not Jeremy Pruitt, who does not know what vegetables are.
Yeah, it was a good week. I lost a lot of weight.
Jeremy Pruitt's like, I dare eat plants. Like, look at him. It strikes him as the most ridiculous thing you could do.
Yeah.
How's he still alive? I don't get it.
What do you think cows eat?
Maybe he's
Jeremy
a bird.
Pruitt?
Maybe he's secretly a bird.
Well, what are you, a cow? You're a cow. I'm not a cow. Still calling me a cow.
Jeremy Pruitt also didn't get this job, although that may be for different reasons.
Yet.
Yeah, that's true. But no, it's your day, Iowa. We're
because
talking about you.
Once Saban moves along and Kevin Steele ascends the Steele throne at Alabama, then Jeremy
the Steele throne.
Sorry.
You know, I think it's also possible. Maybe Nick Saban is tired of like having to play games where it's like, here's Nick Saban versus one of his former assistants. Mm-hmm. Who will win? It's like, you know,
yeah.
Who's like, not going to get a head coaching job ever again? Is Kevin fucking
die before I do.
I think you're onto something, because what is the single biggest recruiting chip to use against Saban right now, right? Like, well, I'm Kirby Smart, mm-hmm. and I can beat Nick Saban. Come play here for me instead.
Yep.
I beat my dad. You should play for me. Nobody's hiring Kevin Steele, so That's safe. That's off the table.
So
it really
see.
Is a classic Saban like overcorrection.
This is
you pair that with going from Bill O'Brien to Tommy Rees.
So let me give you the math on this. Okay, you need 10 years of tenure as a state employee to qualify for or to begin qualification for a state pension.
The Bill Clark
in Alabama.
Okay, in Alabama, in the state of Alabama. All right, and combined with his 4 years of prior service at Alabama, which he's already been at, right? He has 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Dude, this
he's
is
right
the
on
most,
the cusp.
This is the most. This is my last day, right? I'm too old for this. I'm a week away from retirement.
One last job,
right?
Brother Kevin Steele needs 1 year, 1 year of service to qualify for that Alabama pension, and brother.
And he doesn't have the personality to pull off some kind of 700 club scam to make it happen.
No. It might just be a few months. Like, it might be in October. He's like, cha-ching, bye.
God, that'd be neat. Auburn plant Kevin Steele.
You know, I bet Saban's persuaded by this, too. I bet Steele walked in and was like, hey, Nick, are we doing this? He's like, yeah, man, we're going to stick it to the man.
But I don't pay taxes myself, but I don't respect those who levy them.
But I get a cut, just to be clear. You're taking me out to Cracker Barrel every third Sunday. You hear me?
Cracker Barrel.
Brother, you either die behind bars or down in those mines. We're getting you a pension.
Yeah, Saban cannot conceive of someone having coached decades, but not being like, but not having a retirement plan.
What do you mean you're not rich?
Saban cannot conceive of what it's like to just trust that your money will sustain you, no matter how much you have. Because, like, in Saban's mind, he's 8 seconds away from being poor at all times.
I just love this. I want to know the day. I want to figure out the exact day when Pension Quest is complete and Kevin Steele ascends to that of the anointed and he's, like, out. Done. If it is mid-October, Saban's going to be like, well, we just had a difference of opinions and thought we'd let him go. And that opinion was that Kevin thought he should go fish.
I tended to agree. Yeah.
I
wonder if this is Saban is sort of setting up Bama for the opposite of success upon his own exit, you know, like to sort of show that like, oh, you didn't appreciate me enough while
I'm cutting you off, son. You need to learn how to fend for yourself. I've carried you for too long.
Well, they didn't want me around all that bad, but now they're stuck with Kevin Steele, so.
Dude, he is the perfect ejection candidate, though, if Saban wants to leave, because Alabama will come to him and be like, we will pay you to leave, and Kevin Steele will say, thank you. Do I get a pension? Check yes or no.
Works every time.
Works.
I got to leave to be South Carolina interim anyway.
Kevin Steele, the Black Widow of college football.
You know, Kevin Steele has one. He goes and he hangs out in like Dillon, South Carolina, around where he's from. And he goes and there's one restaurant in town in the summer when he's not working that will let him eat lunch there with his shirt off. And that's where he goes and eats lunch.
Wait, I can't tell if you're making this
no,
up.
No, that's completely true. His idea of time off is going and hanging out in upstate South Carolina shirtless.
So interim South Carolina coach.
He goes and eats lunch at the one place that doesn't make him put a top on.
Interim South Carolina coach really is his dream job.
like he's kind of fucking cool.
I mean, he'll hide a gun.
Yeah, he'll hide a gun for you.
That's a fun one.
He doesn't want to wear a shirt.
Not my shirt, though, because awesome. I want to be able to pop that bad boy off.
I just want the one arm, you know, the like, how?
So he and Tommy Rees are going to have a lot to talk about as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Imagine those long car rides.
Tommy Rees is going to be like, I didn't dip, and I wore shirts before I came here.
Hold on. So, what is Tommy Rees's middle name? All right, he's going to be Thomas. He's going to be TK Rees by the time this is done. Not going to be no Tommy no more.
Oh, TK.
They call me Tommy Gunn. Coach Rees, have you always spoken like that?
Hey, Tommy Gunn. While we drop the top, go dip in the back of the truck.
Go spotlight you never later. You old son of a bitch.
Yeah, Tommy Reese has his own line of boiled peanuts now. It's wild.
Starting a Creedence cover band.
He's obsessed with getting a pension.
He said he's going to fight the Pope. He's gotten very
He's gone Baptist. Yeah, Tommy Reese is going to try to cash out a like 70-year Alabama pension.
Why were you trying to tear down a roadside, Tommy?
Because directions are woke. Government can't tell me where to go.
Because the steel man said so.
What do you mean one? What do you mean one way? I decide which way.
Wolfman and I are going to go take our shirts off and eat vegetarian food. See you later.
It's not a gun. It's Reese's Pieces.
By the way, in case I do have one actual cool thing to sell Alabama fans on, when Reese was going to go celebrate a Notre Dame victory this year, he was headed down to the field, and the game wasn't quite over, so he told the other assistant coach who was there, who still had to call play because Reese was like, "Yo, man, I'm gonna go party."
Oh, this is I love this about no, no, no. This yeah, is better. This good. Is better. He oh shit, what was the play? He had a specific yeah, he had a specific play drawn up. He throws down a friend of ours was in the what was in the booth right next door, but he threw down the headset and was like, "Just call duo," and ran.
Just call duo until I'm back on the headset downstairs.
Like I kind of love Tommy Reese.
Just called duo, man. It's good. Yeah. So yeah, I think this is gonna go. I think this is gonna work out well. There'll be a cultural exchange of immense import, and most importantly, the Wolfman's close a day closer to that shirtless retirement he's been dreaming of.
Never wear a shirt again. Buried shirtless.
The dream.
I mean, in a way, we're all buried shirtless.
That's
buried
right.
With my pants.
We're born shirtless. We die shirtless. That's not true, sir.
Hey,
if you don't die shirtless, your soul can't escape.
You're stuck in a shirt forever.
Yeah. Just gave away all my shirts. It's time.
That's how we knew Peepaw was ready.
Listen, this funeral is a cruelty-free environment because the food is vegetarian and you can see this beautiful body on display, shirtless.
What do nips do in death?
You're describing free-range Kevin Steele.
I think it's more he doesn't want to be buried. Just lay me somewhere.
You know what?
Just set me out somewhere.
A shirt will just...
Set me out with a tater salad. We'll go bad after about the same time.
Graves a dirt shirt. I don't want it.
What is the earth but a shirt?
Graves a dirt shirt. What is the earth for a shirt but the earth's molten core? if the molten core... Where are we on the molten core of the earth,
this
y'all?
Is a deep football joke, but I'm going to...
Finally, my soul has escaped its shirt.
I can't wait to be the preacher at Kevin Steele's funeral so I can stand up there and be like, of all people who should understand the importance of taking a knee when you should. Right?
Jesus, dude.
He would have wanted me to remind y'all. Also, don't ever fucking take the Baylor job.
Now please remove your shirts.
Yeah. Bow your heads and remove your shirts.
Bow your heads and pop them open.
Oh, God, we just wrote a country hit.
Who put it in the thing?
Bow your heads and remove your shirts. My dog and my
songs
truck
about
and my...
Kevin Steele's death. That's what he would want.
Daddy, drop the top.
I got dirt on my blue collar.